A shell exploded near a school. Four people were killed in that blast, which took place on the first day of school in a neighborhood close to the airport. In another incident in the same area, another six were killed from shelling, yielding the highest daily civilian toll since a 10-year ceasefire was struck between Kiev and pro-Russian militias last month. Why hasn't the hostilities died down despite a ceasefire? Who is instigating the violence? Are there orders coming from Kiev, the Donetsk People's Republic, or Russia? Will the shaky ceasefire lead to a political solution? In this edition of The Debate, we'll discuss the tug-of-war between Kiev and the East, why Obama and the new NATO chief have blasted the Russian President Putin in posing a grave danger to Ukraine.
Tensions are escalating in the eastern parts of Ukraine, despite a ceasefire which has been underway between Ukrainian government troops and pro-Russian militias since September the 5th. Ukrainian soldiers and pro-Russian forces have been embroiled in deadly clashes in recent weeks. At least 10 people, including teachers and parents, were killed in a rocket attack on a school in Donetsk, spelling a bloody school day in the Flashpoint eastern city. This was the highest civilian death toll since the shaky ceasefire was brokered between Kiev and pro-Russians in the rest of East. Nearly 70 people have already been killed since the truce deal was struck last month. Pro-Moscow forces and Ukrainian troops blame each other for the deadly attack. The latest violence came 3 days after shellfire killed at least 9 Ukrainian soldiers near the main airport in Donetsk. The city is seen as the stronghold of pro-Russian forces. Reports from the volatile city suggest that the situation is still tense there. The shaky ceasefire is threatened by the ongoing violence, which is centered on the government-held airport.
It is very frightening in the east because there are a lot of bombings and shootings. The bridges are also destroyed.
We have visited ATO zones many times. There is war there. There is no ceasefire at all there. This all is happening in the Baltsevo.
Residential areas have also been caught up in fierce battles. Over 3,500 people have been killed since the conflict broke out 6 months ago. The violence has also displaced some 350,000 people. The escalating violence comes just weeks ahead of snap parliamentary polls in the country. Pro-Russian militias have already boycotted the elections, saying they will hold their own regional vote in early November. With no end in sight to the sporadic clashes, the tenuous ceasefire is under increasing threat of collapse, leaving no room for a possible political solution to the crisis in East Ukraine.
Let me introduce a guest for this edition of The Debate from the International Action Center. Sarah Flounders joins us from New York, and columnist at The Hill, Brent Badowski, joins us from Washington. I'd like to welcome you both. Brent Badowski, the ceasefire is only holding on paper. That's what it appears. It's evident from the latest shelling. 10 people have been killed in Donetsk. Why is the truce that supposedly took effect on September 5th has been repeatedly violated?
Well, first of all, some of the truce is holding. Too much of the truce is being violated. Things are a little bit better after this temporary partial truce, but not good enough. I would argue that 90% of the fault for this lies with Russia and with the separatists, 10% with the Ukrainian government. That's my view about it. I think the most interesting thing that's happened in the last few days is Foreign Minister Lavrov of Russia suggested it's time for a yet another new reset of relations with the United States. If he is sincere about that, and I'm not saying he is or isn't, there might be the basis for the kind of agreement that should have happened a long time ago and should have happened really from the beginning. But I think the separatists still want out. The Russians are still backing them and giving them arms. They are encouraging the separatists to keep fighting, even though they say they're not. And it's going to keep getting worse until it gets better from where we are today. So I hope they can all step back and reach a political solution. I think the most important thing will be whether there's any chance at all of a reset of relations between Russia and the U.S., because if there is, things will get better. If there is not, things will get worse again.
I'm going to put that statement up for a challenge with you, Brent Badowski, a little later. But Sarah Flounders, our guest there, says that the separatists want out, but Russians want them to stay. Do you buy the scenario that Brent Badowski is laying out there?
Well, I first want to challenge the very terminology which is used relentlessly in the media and used relentlessly by the U.S., saying again and again that these are separatists, that these are Russians, Russian forces, pro-Russian forces, pro-Moscow forces. That kind of terminology about people in the Ukraine. This is an internal resistance movement against a fascist coup that overthrew the elected government with U.S. funding. Assistant Secretary of State Victoria Nuland bragged that the U.S. had invested more than $5 billion into making this transformation, into funding the social and political forces, into pulling NATO against the will of the majority of the people into NATO. This is really an effort of the U.S. to pull Ukraine apart and to pull it into NATO. And the forces in the east, in Donetsk and Lugansk and in the other cities there, have resisted this fascist coup. They see themselves, and it's important in the media terminology, as anti-fascist forces, to terminate them again and again as Russian forces, which even President Obama did at the NATO meeting. He actually declared, and then NATO said, oh, we have satellite pictures. He declared that Russian troops and Russian tanks had invaded the Ukraine on the very day of the NATO meeting. And then the OSCE special monitors on the ground publicly contradicted NATO and President Obama and said absolutely no forces had crossed from Russia into the Ukraine. There were no tanks. And they actually called, this is a U.S. Supported organization, but they really gave the lie to this questioning used again and again that there's an invasion from Russia. Now, is there support in Russia for these Ukrainian resistance forces? Yes. Otherwise, they surely would have been crushed and totally destroyed by the U.S.-funded and supported forces that have seized hold of Kiev. And that's a real issue here. It's will Ukraine be dragged into the NATO military alliance?
Very well.
Or
good question there.
Let's
pose that to Brett Podolsky.
The forces in the east are calling for autonomy, and they're calling for a federation.
Great.
They are not Russian forces.
Brett Podolsky.
Yeah, first of all, this is a debate. I'm glad it is. I disagree with almost everything she said. Number one, the United States and Poroshenko do not want Ukraine torn apart. They want Ukraine brought back together where it belonged all along, number one. So she has that backwards. Number two, there is no dispute that Russian tanks were massed and troops in the number of 20 to 40,000 at different times were massed on the Russian border, on the Russian-Ukrainian border. There is no dispute that between 3 and 4,000 Russian forces have been in Ukraine for some time. There's no dispute that there is a direct cooperation, funding, financing, and arming of the internal forces in eastern Ukraine, the separatists. They want to be separate from Ukraine by the Russians. There's no factual dispute about any of those things. Now, one can throw around terms like fascist all you want. I stop counting after the third or the fourth reference. That is irrelevant to what's actually happening. This is not a debate about rhetoric. This is a debate about whether Ukraine will remain Ukraine or whether Russia will be able to dominate at least half of Ukraine. The United States, the West, and with all due respect, the OECD want Ukraine to remain Ukraine. There is no attempt, no interest in Ukraine joining NATO. She's wrong about that. In terms of European trade, very possibly, the partial agreement is a step forward, but nobody is suggesting right now that Ukraine join Ukraine.
Great. I saw a reaction on Sarah Flounder's face. I'm sorry, Ben Podolsky. Sarah Flounder, I saw a reaction in your face. Go ahead.
Well, none of this is factually true and beyond dispute or any of those things as are being said. First of all, to call the forces in the east separatists, what they actually put on the vote, which overwhelmingly passed, was the right to a federation, the right to autonomy. That's not saying separation in any way whatsoever. And it was the U.S. that has tried to pull Ukraine apart and pull Ukraine into NATO. And the European agreement that Ukraine was to sign, which is what led to the coup, said that the military alliances that the EU is part of, Ukraine would become part of. Now, that means joining NATO. There's no way to say that joining NATO is not on the agenda.
That
is what the agenda is all about. It is pulling Ukraine at
Who's
no,
it?
I am certainly not. And now, why was Ukraine even invited to the NATO meeting? That's not an. Was Ukraine at the NATO meeting? Tell me, was Ukraine at the NATO meeting? It most certainly was. Was Poroshenko there?
Discuss,
he most certainly
to discuss,
was. So you want to deal in myth.
May I answer your you question?
You want to deal in the myth that this is all about an independent Ukraine. You're just spreading total factual distortions.
Ben Podesta, go ahead.
Now, there is nobody in the NATO alliance, not the U.S., not Europe, that is pushing for Ukraine to join NATO. They are not. It is not true. End of discussion. The issue with the Ukraine is whether there will be trade relations with the European community, the European Union, and that should happen to some degree. There may be interest in formally joining.